All right, we are looking at chapters 13 to 16 of the book of Leviticus. Several things under consideration in this, we'll get to in just a few moments. Leprosy is going to be dealt with in two chapters. That's not all that difficult. The matter of the Day of Atonement is quite interesting to us and needful for us to talk about. The most difficult chapter to teach in a mixed audience is chapter 15, deals with bodily discharges. I hear people say all the time, they do not want to teach Song of Solomon. Try chapter 15. They say that because they don't understand the book. If you understand the book, it's not what you think it's about. That is the book of Song of Solomon. When you think it's hard to teach, you don't understand the nature of the book. But when you understand the book, it's all right. And so we're going to make it through chapter 15. There is some difficulty there, not in understanding. It's just the nature of the subject. But we'll deal with that. It's something God has revealed. Here's our outline that we're following. We are in chapter 13, which brings us to the third section in this outline. Laws for daily living, clean and unclean. We're in chapters 11 to 15. And then we'll get to the Day of Atonement. It sets off to itself. This is Wiersbe's outline. We're in the section of God's precepts for separation, a holy nation, there that point 2a in his outline, and that's where we are. Let's review where we have been. Chapter 1, what was it about? Burnt offerings. Chapter 2 dealt with grain offerings. Chapter 3, peace offerings. 4, sin. 5, trespass offering and restitution. That continues or bleeds over into chapter 6. And it also deals with offerings, chapter 7, eating of blood. Now, that completed that first section that we've been talking about. Starting with chapter 8, we have what? Consecration of Aaron and his sons. Chapter 9 is the beginning of their work of priesthood, a notable chapter. Chapter 10, what happened? Nadab and Abihu, good, and the duties of the priest. Then we have in chapter 11, clean and unclean animals, and then we concluded last time with chapter 12, purification of a woman after childbirth. All right, chapter 13. We're ready for chapter 13. If you are looking at your questions, question number one, what's chapter 13 about? Laws concerning leprosy. And so let's talk a little about leprosy. Here's what we're going to see in chapter 13. Now, chapter 14 deals with the leper himself, and we'll talk about that when we get there. But the first 44 verses deals with how the priest pronounces them clean and unclean. And then 45 and 46, what the leper is to do. And then there's what if there's leprosy in the garment. And we'll talk about that in 47 to 58. So we've got some ground to cover there. Let's talk about leprosy itself just for a moment. This is from the pulpit commentary. Some of you have that. If you don't have the series, you may have the online edition. I want to suggest to you, as we read this, this goes back a few years, but nonetheless, this is modern compared to Bible times, that leprosy is a broad term in the Bible. And it encompasses more than just one single disease. For example, I don't know of a better illustration, COVID-19. There are several coronaviruses, but COVID-19 is a specific coronavirus. And so we're not talking about a specific kind of thing that was, there was only one disease that fit the term leprosy. It was a broader term. But listen to Pulpit. Pulpit said the name leprosy has been made to cover a number of diseases, similar but not identical in character. There are many spurious forms of leprosy and many diseases akin to leprosy which do not now come under discussion. The first symptom of the malady is a painless spot which covers an indolent ulcer, and the ulcer may continue unprogressive for months or for years, during which the person affected is able to go to do his ordinary business. But at the end of these periods, whether longer or shorter, it produces a more repulsive and foul disfigurement of the human face and frame than any known disease. The features of the face changing their character and part of the body occasionally mortifying or dropping off, death at last comes suddenly when a vital part of the body has been affected. Well, Colin Daitlich talks a little more specific than does, and I don't have a quote on the screen from them. They talked about very frequently, even for years before there was an outbreak of the disease itself, there would be spots, yellow spots that would arise. There would be without people begin to have little or no feeling and assume hair around these spots would assume the same color of the spots. They would later pierce through the cellular tissue and reach the muscles and bones. The hair becomes woolly and white, and finally the falls off. The skin becomes hard and rough and seamy. Lymph exudes in all forms and forms large scabs that later fall off and form an offensive running sore. And that's just the beginning of their long quotation. Terrible disease is what we're trying to get the picture of. Not a common disease in our time. There's been reported by the CDC, whether you can trust them or not, I don't know, but they say there's between 124 to 216 reported cases from the year 2013 to 2022 in the U.S. So it's not a very common disease. It's not like you know somebody that's probably had leprosy. But what I'm suggesting is, everything I can read, that the leprosy that you may find if you knew somebody that had leprosy, which is more common in India, Indonesia, and Brazil than it is in the U.S., that if you did know somebody that had leprosy, it may not be like what we have in biblical times. That makes sense? It's a skin disease, and we're going to go with that and pretty much leave it at that. All right, let's work our way through chapter... Well, before we do that, I adapted this from Mike Willis. I thought this was good. The parallel between leprosy and sin. That if we take away from this how loathsome leprosy was, then that there's something about sin, because leprosy all through the Old Testament times was a detestable disease. You were considered unclean. So here's some of the parallels. It's loathsome. Same thing is true of sin. The disease had an significant and almost... imperceptible beginning. That is, you don't see it when it's starting. It's progressive. It starts something small and you think is insignificant, and then it grows till finally it kills you. It affects the whole person. The part of the body becomes insensitive and numb, have no feeling. It's incurable. It separates the person from the sanctuary of God. It separated the person from the fellowship with God's people. It causes death, and dealing with it requires extreme measures. We'll deal with leprosy in the house, and you, there, at one point you dismantle the complete house. You burn your clothes. You're separated for 7 days, etc. And on and on and on. It requires extreme measures. That makes sense, the parallel? Most of that I borrowed from Willis, but I add a couple of points in there to finish out. All right, let's look at verses 1 to 44. We're not going to have time to deal with every detail. I want us to get the overview. And as we do in, for example, the chapters 1 through 7, we know where to go when we come back to leprosy. We know where to go and find and track through some passages and say, here's where we find the laws concerning leprosy. All right. So who determines, first of all, about the leprosy, whether the person has the case of leprosy, whether they're clean or unclean? The priests do that. All right. So let's look at verses 1 to 3. The priest, they come to the priest. This is the instruction that when a man has a swelling or a scab or a spot on his skin, he comes to Aaron the priest and to one or one of his sons, and he looks to see if the hair if the hair on the sore has turned white or if it goes deeper than the skin. And verse 3, if it's a leprous sore, he can look at him and pronounce him he's unclean. And so that means he has to go through the ritual of cleansing. All right, now verses 4 to 8, what's that about? Yeah, if it's not leprosy, in other words, a man say, I've got spots, looks like a spot and discoloration on my skin, and he goes and calls for the priest to come, and the priest looks at him, and he may find out, according to verse 4, that... it doesn't look like he has leprosy. What's he to do? We're not sure if it's leprosy yet. You're going to isolate him for how long? 7 days. And then at the end of 7 days, going to check him again. And And if it has not spread, then he shall be isolated for another 7 days. And then the priest comes and looks at him on the seventh day. And then what? I'm at verse 6. He pronounces him clean if it hasn't spread. If it hasn't, so it may not be. So he could be isolated, then he's washed. If he's not, he's cleansed. And if it's leprosy, verse 8, if the priest see, well, okay, there's a scab and it's spread on his skin, he's going to pronounce him unclean. All that's talking about, you're not going to remember 3 weeks from now the exact procedure he went through. Just remember that the priest was to determine that, and he determines whether he's clean or unclean. Verses 9 through 11, there's a practical point to be made here at verses 9 through 11. There may be a case of old leprosy. So if one has a sore, leprous sore, on a person, and he's brought to the priest, he looks at him, and if there is swelling in the skin, etc., and if it's an old leprosy, the priest is pronounce him unclean, but he should not isolate him, for he is unclean. Now, that's kind of odd, don't you think? What's going on at verse 11? In other words, why didn't he go through the 7 day period? Because this is a reoccurrence of leprosy he's had before, so it becomes obvious that he has leprosy. He's unclean, but he's not going to be isolated for 7 days, and the priest check him and then check him again. Does that make sense? So because it's a case of old leprosy, it becomes obvious to him. Now, verse 12 and 13 is a little bit difficult for, at least commentators differ a little bit what's going on here. So let's talk about what this is. Leprosy breaking out on the whole body, 12 to 17. Some approach this, before we work through this, that it's a case where a person thinks he has leprosy and it's not really leprosy. And so he just thought it to be leprosy. And so leprosy breaks out on him. Well, he just thinks that's the case. Others think that this is talking about it has spread as far as it will go. So let's see what we find in the text. Blackmore says, we don't know exactly why God does what he does at verse 13. The Blackmores are worth listening to on the book of Leviticus. Now, you may not agree with them always, but I think they're worth listening to. So what do we have in 12 to 17 now? If leprosy breaks out over all the skin, over the whole body, from the head to the foot, and when the priest looks, he pronounces him clean, even though he's covered from head to toe and has all turned white, he is clean. But if the raw flesh appears, he's unclean. Now, exactly what's going on in 12 and 13, I don't know. I cite the Blackmores who suggest we don't know why God did that. This was their answer to that. Exactly why God does that. Others have suggested, and they hint at this, that it has to do more with the fact that it's spread as far as it's gone, and it's not going to be contagious and spread further. He's covered from head to toe. It's not going to go any further. It's not spreading. He's as contaminated as he can be, and so he's pronounced clean. Now, you want more information on that? I'm going to have to start making stuff up. Part of that I already did. So, do what? Not going to do that. I don't know what else to say about that. I think the Blackmores are right. God didn't tell us exactly why, so I'm going to leave it at that. And then if God had wanted me to know more, I think he would have told me more. All right, that gets us down through verse 17 now. Let's start at verse 18. There may be leprosy from a boil. What do we learn in 18 to 23? Yeah, and so the priest comes and looks. I'm at verse 21. Good observation. That there is no white hair in it, and it does not any deeper in the skin, and it has not faded, then the priest shall isolate him for 7 days. But if it's spread over all the skin, he pronounces him unclean because it's a leprous sore, etc. But if the bright spot stays in one place and hasn't spread, then the priest shall pronounce him clean. So, again, the details of that you won't remember 3 weeks from now, but the priest is going to determine if it broke out from a boil. It might be a burn on the skin from a fire. Verses 24 to 28. What's said there? Burn of the skin by fire. And there's raw flesh of the burn. It's reddish white. Yeah, because it's a leper sore. That is, the priest comes and makes that determination. But if he looks and he hasn't determined it's leprosy, he isolates him for 7 days, and he looks at him on the seventh day, and so we go back through that ritual, then he should pronounce him unclean because it's a sore. But if it's not, then he pronounces him as being clean from the scar of the burn. All right? Now then, we get to a little more about the sore on the head at verse 29 to 37. The sores on the head are in the beard. And so it may be. Notice he mentions, lost my place here. Look, verse 29, yes, that's where I am. That a man or a woman has a sore on the head or the beard, and if it appears deeper than the skin, they'll be pronounced clean. Now, here's what I'm looking for at verse 30. It is a scald, a leprosy of the head or the beard. That's a disease of itching or a scab on the head. That's all that refers to. Now, what else happens in verses 29 through verse 37? What if he comes and he has this scab on his head? The priest comes and looks. If he's not determined that he has leprosy just yet, isolates him for 7 days, checks him on the seventh day. Are we beginning to see a pattern? And he's going to do something else, though. Yeah, shave everything except that spot and isolate the one who has that scab for another 7 days, and then the priest checks him, verse 34, and then he pronounces him clean. He washes his clothes, but if it has spread over the skin, then the priest looks at him, and he will pronounce him unclean. That gets us down through verse 37. Now, verse 38 to 44 talks about two matters. One is he mentions if a man or woman has bright spots on the skin of the body, specifically white bright spots. Several mention this. In fact, a couple, I believe one translation has in the footnote. I didn't go back and check that. But that has to do with freckled skin. And so if one has freckled skin, is not to be confused with leprosy. That's what 38 and 39 deal with. So starting at verse 40, there could be a bald spot come on one's head. Remember, one of the things we read from pulpit is sometimes the hair turns loose and comes out because of leprosy. What do we see in verses 40 through 44? All right. So now down through verse 44, I know we that's kind of a herd, but we got a lot of verses to cover. Basically what we've covered, and again, I'm not belittling the text, it's just these details. If we fast forward 3 weeks from now and I said, okay, close your Bible, what was to be done in the case of the boil, and how did that differ from, you're not going to remember that, and I'm not going to remember whether you got it right or not either. But we know the source and of where to go to find that information, and we also know that you go to the priest. He determines whether you're clean or unclean. If you're unclean, you have to go through some process of being cleansed. All right, sacrifice we'll get to a little bit later. All right, now then, we're ready for 45 and 46, what the leper is to do. Only two verses devoted to this. So you tell me, what's he to do in verse 45? He's now a leper. Yeah, and then he dwells alone, verse 46, outside the camp. And so he leaves his head bare, and he tears his clothes. And so when somebody sees him, as they come in contact with him, they can tell this is a guy that is showing a sign of leprosy. And as he gets closer and he has any contact at all with someone, he covers his upper lip and hollers, "Unclean, unclean." So they know to back away. Don't touch him. Don't get away. Because if they touch him, what happens to them? They become unclean. And so he's to go and dwell alone outside the camp for a period. That's not the same as being cut off from his people, as we talked about last time. All right, questions on that? Comments? All right, now let's talk about leprosy in the garment. Your footnote may say, and some translations may say, instead of leprosy here, some have argued that this is not the disease of leprosy, but rather this is mildew or some fungi that grows within a garment. I would refer you to the Blackmores. They spend a great deal of space, or some space at least. Let me just put it that way. They spend some space arguing, and I think properly so, that this is not mildew or some fungi. This has to do with leprosy. And it may be a form of leprosy that we do not know anything about currently. Does that make sense? And that there is no reason, because there's going to be leprosy in the house. And it's interesting to me that he's been talking about leprosy, 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 and if it's in the garment, then he suddenly shifts gears to some kind of mildew that is on the garment and in the clothes. Now, I believe it's the New International may use the term mildew. Some footnotes will say that. I'm leaning toward what the Blackmores argue, and I'll leave it at that. Now, let's talk about leprosy in the garment. Let's just take whether we understand how leprosy, the disease of leprosy, could be in the garment. I'm going to take it on the surface that the text says that's the case. Now, there's a couple of references here at verse 48. There is a warp. On a cursory reading, you may think that says a wrap, but it's a warp and a woof. Those are woven garments, knitted garments. The New Century would so translate that. Essentially, they are the same. It's the idea of a woven garment. The warp refers to the length of the threads, according to Brown, Driver, and Briggs, in the weaving. And so the long threads that you weave across, that would be the warp. And the woof is a woven garment. So it's a knitted or woven garment or cloth. Make sense? All right. With that in mind, let's get the three things that happen here. If there's active leprosy, verses 4, if you find a garment, be it this woven garment, whatever it's made of, it may be of something made of leather, of wool, or of linen, and if it has active leprosy, what do you do with the garment? Do what? All right, show it to the priest, and then dropping down by the time we get to verse 52, what do you do with it? You're going to burn the garment. And so there's leprosy in the garment. We don't want it to break out. We don't want it to spread. All right, now beginning at verse 53, what if it's a garment that's not active? What do? You wash the garment. And then it may spread after that. What if it spreads? Verse 57. You're going to do the same thing. You're going to burn the garment. So God had means of taking care of the leprosy. Now let's get to the end of the chapter. If the garment is washed and it doesn't spread, what if you wash the garment and it doesn't spread, then the garment is clean. Pretty simple laws. Does that make sense? Now again, you're not going to remember everything in chapter 13, but these were laws concerning leprosy. Let's get ahead of ourselves now, and let's jump over to chapter 14, verse 57. They were to be taught the laws of leprosy to teach what is clean and unclean, and when it's clean, this is the law of leprosy. God wanted that to be taught to the people. So if you lived in Old Testament times and you were an Israelite, you needed to be taught the law. So if you got leprosy in a garment, now I know what's going to have to be done. I'm going to have to burn it if it's leprosy, or I can wash it if it's not active, and then it may be, but what if it starts growing? Then I've got to burn the garment. So you had to know what those laws were. Here's what we're going to have to do. Make sense? Here's what the leper does. Here's what happens if you have it in your garments. Now, if I don't learn anything else from this, that leprosy was a detestable disease, and I think Willis is right, that there's a great parallel to sin. They went to great means to get rid of this. And then maybe this was an expensive garment, and you're going to burn the garment to get rid of the leprosy. It may cost you to get rid of sin. You may have to cut off some things. You may have to lose some things to cut off sin. There's some practical things to be learned. All right, questions on chapter 13 before we go to 14. All right, here's chapter 14. Let's talk about the cleansing of the leper, or cleansing the leper himself. So let's see what happens here and see if we can get through this, and I want us to get to the Day of Atonement. So we have three things: how the lepers are cleansed, the sacrifice a cleansed leper is to offer, and then leprosy in the house, similar to that being in the garment. So let's talk about what the priest was to do and what the leper was to do. The first seven verses is the priest action. So chapter 13, more determining whether he's got it or not. Now then, what does the priest do? All right, very good. Verses 1 to 7, he is to take the items that are mentioned, take two living birds and the cedar wood and scarlet and hyssop and kill one of them, and he's to sprinkle the blood and dip the living bird in the blood of the dead bird, and then sprinkle the person who has been cleansed, and then the live bird is sent off to fly away. Now, verses 8 and 9, what's the leper? That's what the priest is supposed to do. What does the leper, the one who's been cleansed, to do? Verses 8 and 9. Now, you look at that and think about how dramatic or how far they had to go with reference to this leprosy. He's cleansed of his leprosy. He's to shave himself and... As he shaves himself, he cuts off his beard and even his eyebrows and all of his hair. He shaves off and washes his clothes and he'll be clean, but he's to stay outside of his tent for 7 days. Look how far they go to try to get to make sure they're cleansed of their leprosy. All right, now that's what to be done for the lepers to be cleansed. Now, let's get verses 10 to 32, the sacrifice that a cleansed leper is to offer. And so I'm going to hurriedly go through this, not that it's unimportant. This is important. But notice they were to bring two lambs, a ewe and an ephah of fine flour. An ephah, that is 3/10 of an ephah of fine flour. A tenth would be 2 pints, so you can do your math on that. And a log of oil. A log is a half a pint. And so these were the items that were to be brought. There's going to be a trespass offering, a wave offering, and a sin offering. Now notice he talks about to bring the two lambs, and here's the items to be bring. There's the trespass offering in verse 13 and 14. And then there's the oil and how it was to be used. How was the oil to be used? Take some of the log of oil and pour it in the palm of his hand, and then he's dip his finger in it, and then sprinkle some of it 7 times, and the rest of it, of the oil in his hand, he puts on the right ear, and the right thumb, and the big toe, right big toe, on the blood of the trespass offering. And the rest of the oil of the priest's hand should be put on the head of him who has been cleansed. In other words, this is the cleansing ritual to go through. Then there's the sin offering, verse 19, the burnt offering, verse 20, and then there's provisions for the poor. What do we mean by provisions for the poor? Absolutely. Now, just a footnote for what it's worth. You may have this in your Bible from a previous study unrelated to Leviticus. There are three actions that are distinct. that are noted in verse 15 and 16. And this has to do with dealing with baptism. Is it immersion? Notice there is the pouring and there's the dipping and there is the sprinkling. They're not the same. Dipping is our word baptizo in the Septuagint. Septuagint is when the Hebrew was translated into Greek. It's the word baptizo. Sound familiar? That's our word for baptize. So there's a difference in immersion, pouring, and sprinkling. Those are distinct for what that may be worth. All right, let's move on in interest of time and talk about leprosy in the house. Again, I cite the Blackmores who say that those who argue that the garment having leprosy was mildew, while they think that's not correct, they really get strong at verse 33 and 34 that it's inexcusable to think this is mildew, that this is leprosy. And for what that may be worth, this is the first law that's given that focuses in application are not applied until they get into the land of Canaan. Does that make sense? Because it has to do with their house. They're dwelling in tents now. And so this is talking about the walls of their house, perhaps made of stone and of other materials. So now, what happens if they have leprosy in the house? If there's a plague in the house, and by the way, God sends that. There would be a plague God would send, according to verse 34. And they find it in the house. What are they going to do? Yeah, empty the house so the priest can come in and examine it. And if it's there, scrape the walls, try to remove it. But if it comes back, verse 43, now we're in point B here, 43 to 47. If it comes back and it spreads, what are they going to do? Verse 45, they're going to break down the house. In other words, dismantle the house. Talking about drastic measures. That's your house. And leprosy's broke out in there. Now, I want to get rid of the leprosy, but it costs me my house. It may cost you your house to get rid of sin. That's a powerful point. It may cost you, and I don't mean your literal house. It may cost you that. It may cost you your family to get rid of sin. Now, at verse 48, if they were clean, they were to be sprinkled and cleansed. And then, I'm going to finish the chapter just by making a quick summary because we want to get to 15 and really get to 16. That this is the law of leprosy that needs to be taught. And so you were to learn that. If you were a Jew, you needed to know what the law was. That if leprosy, if you had a friend that is a leper, you need to know what's going on. Make sense? All right, now we're going to look at bodily discharges. This is a delicate subject, but it's a biblical subject. And so the point of chapter 15 concerning bodily discharges is the fact that they were rendered unclean because of the bodily discharges. So there, first of all, is the bodily discharges for the man. One writer suggested the exact nature of the discharges, that this was not one particular thing in mind, though there are some things, like verses 16 to 18, that he's very specific, that the exact nature of that could have been a number of things, but we'll leave it at that. That there is the bodily discharge, and if there is that bodily discharge, verses 1 to 3 says it's unclean. Now, verses 4 to 12, I'm going to hit quickly, not that there's anything there that's really delicate, but it just basically says anything and anybody that he touches or touches him becomes unclean. Pretty simple. All right, let's jump to verse 13. What he's to do to be cleansed? What is he to do? Take 7 days for his cleansing, wash his clothes in running water. Say again. Bathe his body. And he'll take for himself two turtle doves at the door of the tabernacle and take it to the priest and make a burnt offering. And he'll make an atonement for him or make a sacrifice for him because of his discharge. If he has an emission, that's pretty, just read that, and that pretty much tells you what's going on. I'm going to leave that alone, except to say if he does that or has that, then he is unclean. Well, the woman is a little more obvious here, that there's going to be this time of her regular impurity, as the text would call it, which is mentioned throughout the Bible. that she would be unclean. And again, we have verses 20 to 24, anything that touches her or anyone that touches her, anything she touches becomes unclean. And then there is impurity beyond her regular impurity. In other words, that continues on for her usual time of impurity. I'm reading verse 25. Then again, she's unclean. Anything she touches is unclean. And here's what she's to do to become clean. Now, I want to drop down and finish that chapter because I want to get in the last 7 minutes to the Day of Atonement. They are to be separate during uncleanness. Now, star, underline, highlight verse 31. This is the key to what this uncleanness, whether you're talking about leprosy or particularly about the bodily discharges, is all about. That you should separate the children of Israel from their uncleanness, which leprosy made them unclean. Separate them from their uncleanness, lest they die in their uncleanness when they defile my tabernacle, which is among them. This is what it was all about. God did not want his tabernacle, his holy place, defiled. So when they had leprosy, he wanted them to be clean. When they had bodily discharges, he wanted them to be clean. Does that make sense? So this is what it was about. It wasn't just sanitary things that I want my people to be sanitary and I wanted to make sure they don't have germs, etc. That wasn't what it was all about. It was about, I do not want my tabernacle contaminated. Does that make sense? So if you ever wonder what's about, star, highlight, circle, underline, do something with verse 31 so that it jumps up and flag that when you come back to that. Now our time is running out, so let's get to the Day of Atonement. And we can get this rather quickly, I think. We will come again and again and again to the Day of Atonement. And so we probably won't make a lot of references to chapter 15 from here on, but we will to chapter 16. And so flag this chapter in your mind, the Day of Atonement. The priest were to offer blood of bulls and goats for himself and for the congregation. This was said in the context of Nadab and Abihu. Now, why is it mentioned about Nadab and Abihu? Because they were presumptuous and did things contrary to God. So God said told Moses to tell Aaron, don't just come at any time, verse 2, into the holy place. In other words, you don't just march into the holy place and make a sacrifice anytime you want to. You're going to do it when I want to. And this one, look at verse 34. The Day of Atonement is going to happen when? I'm not talking about the month. We'll get to that later. But how often, I guess, is my question. Once a year. Might underline that at verse 34. This is once a year. And so the instructions, this is when and how he was to enter. Now, look at verse 3. He's going to take the blood of bulls for a sin offering and the blood of ram for a burnt offering. He was to wear the linen trousers. That is, he was to dress in his attire. I take it that's not the full garb that the priest wore, but the white linen section suggesting purity as he goes in to do that. And then he offers, there's first of all a bull offering that he offers at verse 6 and then described in 11 to 14, and he does that for himself. And then at verse 7 through 10 and verse 15, there is the goat offering. Now, I want you to notice at verse 10, there's going to be a scapegoat that shall be presented alive before the Lord to make atonement upon it. There's the word atonement. Then let it go as a scapegoat. Now, there was an atonement made for the scapegoat, verse 10. There is atonement made for the holy place, verse 16. And those things had not sinned. So why does atonement need to be made for the scapegoat and atonement made for the holy place? It's because of the sins of the people. Does that make sense? It's the people's sins that created the problem, and so they had, that is, the goat obviously could not sin. The holy place did not sin, but atonement is made for them. In Now let's talk about the word atonement. The word means to cover, to make good, or to appease. Literally, it has the idea of covering. And that's how it's sometimes translated. And so it's the idea of appeasing. So God's wrath is stirred because of sin, and this was designed to appease. Jesus is our atonement. We'll say more about that a little bit later. Now, what I'm interested in is, look at verse 16 to 19. You might flag verse 16. He makes atonement in the holy place because of the uncleanness of the children of Israel. I flag verse 33, put verse 16 with that. And he should do this for the tabernacle. And then he makes atonement, verse 17, for himself and for his household and for all the children of Israel. So he's going to go into the tabernacle, the most holy place. What's he going to do when he gets into the most holy place? Verse 18. He's going to take the blood. Put it on the horns of the altar all around. And say again. Yes. Now, once he's done that, he comes out, verse 20 to 22, and he lays his hands on the live goat and to confer the iniquity of the children of Israel and sends it away. Now, one writer made this observation. The one goat whose blood was shed reminds and points to the fact that blood is essential for the removing of sin. The sending away of this scapegoat suggests that when sin is removed and sin is atoned for, sin is taken away. Does that make sense? It goes away. So we see a picture of what happens when Jesus died for us. It took the blood of Christ to get rid of sin, and he sends it away. Does that make sense? There's a scapegoat in the sense that it's gone away. Now then, he changes his garments, and I'm more interested now to come down to this being a statute forever, beginning at verse 29. So here we are, right here. He changes his garment. Let's talk about this statute forever. This is going to be something that will take this atonement for the sanctuary, might underline that, for the tabernacle, for the altar, and for the priest, and for the people. So what is he atoning for? All of the above. Does that make sense? For the holy sanctuary, the tabernacle, the altar, the priest, and the people. Verse 34, he does it when? Once a year. Now let's back up to verse 29. We'll flag two things and we're going to be about done. When does this take place? Seventh month. That would be the month of Tishri. This is right here. So if you kind of want to get a picture, this is our January, February, March, April, May. We come right here to our September. Their year started here with Nisan, and comes around, and it's at this month right here. Here's the Day of Atonement. Right here is where that takes place. Does that make sense? So that would be the 10th day, the 7th month on the 10th day of that month. Now notice and flag this at verse 29. They will afflict their souls. What does that mean? We call it something different now. Well, it does do with humble, but something people do and need to do maybe more of. Fasting. Yeah, it's fasting. That's all it means, is means they're fasting. Let me give you a couple of evidence. By the time, your footnote in the English Standard, if you are using that, look at your footnote at verse 29, and I think it'll say, and maybe the New King James, I'm not sure, that it will say fasting. By the time of Jeremiah, the Day of Atonement and this day of afflicting your soul was called the Fasting Day, or the Day of Fasting, Jeremiah 36:6. By the New Testament times, Acts 20 and verse 7, it was called the Fast, just the Fast. This was the Day of Atonement. And your footnotes will say the Day of Atonement, the Fast, the Day of Atonement. This passage right here. Makes sense? Afflict your soul. By the way, that's the only fasting that was commanded in the Old Testament to my knowledge. There may be another, but I don't remember. I think that's the only fasting, not the only fasting that was done, the only fasting commanded in the Old Testament that I know of. I may be wrong, and if I am, I'll correct that. Let's stop right there.